All right. Good morning, everyone. So let's continue today, Meretz Hashem, with Kapitel Mem Gimel. So we're picking up, this is, as you can see, one of the shorter kapitlach, but again, incredibly full of meaningful and relevant ideas. So writes David HaMelech the following. Let's just take a quick look through it. Shaftini Elokim V'riva Rivi. Literally now, Shaftini we would normally translate as how? As judge, but we'll see, interestingly enough, why the English translation over here uses the word, ultimately, avenge. Shafteini Elokim verivari vi, avenge me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, plead my cause, migoy lo chasid, against an unkind nation. Me'ish mirma va'avlote faltini, from a man of deceit. There's a typo here, very important, it's supposed to be not and justice, but rather and injustice. And from injustice, you shall rescue me. Pasuk Beis, ki ata Elokei ma'uzi, lama zinachtani, lama koderes aleich belachas oyev. For you are the God of my strength, why have you abandoned me? Why should I walk in gloom under the oppression of the enemy? Pasuk Gimel, shlach orcha v'amitcha, hema yanchuni. Send your light and your truth that they may lead me. Yevi'uni el har kodshecha ve'el mishkenosecha. Bring me to your holy mountain and to your dwellings. Va'avoa el mizbach elokim, pasuk dalet, verse 4. Va'avoa el mizbach elokim el kel simchas gili va'otcha bikinor elokim elokai. And I will come to the altar of God, to the God of my joy and exaltation. I will thank you with a lyre, my God, O God, my God. And finally, pasuk hey, matishtochachi nafshu matehemi. Why are you downcast, my soul, and why do you stir within me? Hochili leilokim, Jesus, matehemi alai, hochili leilokim, ki od odene shios panai ve'elokai. Hope to God, for I will yet thank him for the salvations of my countenance and my God. So again, remember, this kapitel seems to follow a very similar pattern that we've seen throughout Sefer Tehillim, namely the idea that David HaMelech is clearly in distress, and not just simple distress, but significant distress. David HaMelech clearly feels oppressed. David HaMelech feels persecuted. When I say feels, because remember, sometimes in Sefer Tehillim there are things that are actually happening, and sometimes there are things that David HaMelech perceives as happening. Remember, a very important idea is that if a person feels a certain way, then what does that mean? Then it's very important. Then, speaking to a room filled with women, so I'm going to validate this idea. If you feel a certain way, then by definition, that feeling becomes your reality. Whether it is real or not is absolutely irrelevant. Meaning, very often in life, I feel a certain way, and objectively, the way I feel is incorrect and is not true. That doesn't change the fact that I feel that way. So David HaMelech, that's the reason I'm giving this qualification. There are times that David HaMelech is actually persecuted, and David HaMelech is actually being pursued by enemies. And there are other times where David HaMelech is not actively being pursued, but he feels persecuted. The fact that he feels persecuted makes persecution his reality, even if in fact that is not the objective reality. So what's happening in this particular kapitel? So the Radak and the Alshich, and we'll see Rav Hirsch, really follow along the same basic idea. Take a look at the Radak in number 2. Shafteini Elokim, literally avenge me God, Gam Zeha Mizmor Aloshon B'nei HaGolos. So the Radak understands that Kapitel Mem Gimel, chapter 43, is in fact a continuation of chapter 42. And just like in Kapitel Mem Beis, the theme of the Kapitel was Golos, was Diaspora. Remember again, in Sefer Tehillim there are different types of Kapitlach. There are some Kapitlach, there are some chapters that speak to David HaMelech's personal circumstances. There are some Kapitlach that speak to Klal Yisrael's present circumstances. And there are some chapters that are a prophetic foreshadow of what it is that is going to occur in the future. The Radak understands that chapter 43, like chapter 42, is a prophetic foreshadow about diaspora, about what is going to happen in the future to Klal Yisrael, about the challenges, the trials and travails that await us. Shafteini. So what does it mean when David HaMelech says, avenge me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, kach mishpati meha'ayvim. God, take my judgment away from my enemies. What does that mean? Beriva rivi, fight my fight. Ki ein bi yecholes lariv es rivi. And this again is a theme we've seen now for the second week in a row from David HaMelech, which is, Ribono shel Olam, I no longer have any energy to fight. We see this concept, by the way, in a number of different places where you see great people who essentially say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I can't do this anymore. And often what they do is they go to sleep. It's interesting. We know, you know, Rachmana Litzlan, if a person suffers from depression, so one of the telltale signs, of chronic depression, is what? Is sleep. Why? Because sleep is an escape. Sleep is an escape. When a person goes to sleep, they do not... I'm not talking about like if you have teenagers at home, you have to get worried about them. That's part of teenagers. Again, the idea over here is that sleep is an escape. So you see, for example, the paradigmatic example of this is Yonah, right? When Yonah gets on the boat and the boat is about to be torn apart by an incredible storm, so what does Yonah do? He goes below deck and the Navi says, Vayishkav Vayiradein. Literally, he falls into a deep sleep because Yonah wants absolutely nothing to do with his circumstances. David HaMelech also discusses about going to sleep, but not sleep because of fatigue, or at least not physical fatigue. It's emotional fatigue. I can't do this anymore. I just simply can't do this anymore. We see other examples of this throughout Tanakh as well. So according to the Radak, what David HaMelech is saying is, Ribono Shel Olam, Riva Rivi. You have to take the fight over from here. I fought enough. I've spent my life literally as an actual soldier, we'll call it, as waging physical wars and waging emotional battles as well. And Ribono Shel Olam, I can't do it anymore. Ki im biyecholis l'rives rivi. Why? Now what's happening? See, whenever you see a statement like this, especially by David HaMelech, who was a warrior, he was a warrior inside and out. He was willing to rise up to any enemy that would confront him. So what happened now, David HaMelech, or again, whether in your personal life or in the national life, that makes you say, I can't do this anymore? He says, Migay lo chasid. I'll tell you why. Because my enemies are not righteous. What does that mean? He says, Ki elu hagoyim hamoshlim bi, im hayu chasidim hayisa omer, ha-emes atem, ha-emes itam, excuse me, velo iti. Because if my enemies were righteous, I would say, you know what? Truth rests with them and not with me. Va'anvanasi gavru, and ultimately it's my sins that have brought this reality upon me. Lefichach eshev bagalos birishusam. This is an interesting idea that the Radak is bringing down. David HaMelech is saying, look, if I was suffering at the hands of my enemy, and I felt that my suffering was warranted, I felt that my suffering was deserved. Sometimes suffering is deserved. Sometimes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, this is what we lack in the post-prophetic era. When there were Nevi'im, so the Navi was able to tell us, do you know why this is happening? This is happening because you did A, B, C, and D. So, okay, I'm not happy with the suffering, but I understand that it's retribution for my negative deeds. I deserved it. I deserved it. The challenge of suffering in the post-prophetic era is we often don't know why, we often don't know just why things happen. David HaMelech says like this, if you tell me that I'm being punished because of my deeds, if I felt that my enemies were persecuting me because of what I did wrong, then you know what? I wouldn't say a thing. I would accept my suffering with happiness, understanding that my suffering is retribution for my misdeeds. But here's the problem. I'll tell you what the problem is. My enemies are not righteous. Not only are they not righteous, they're deceitful people. So according to the Radak, David HaMelech is saying something quite interesting, which is, Ribono Shel Olam, do you know why I'm broken now? Do you know why I can't fight anymore? Why you have to take over over here? It's not because of my suffering. It's because of what I perceive to be unjust suffering. That I feel, again, if I'm being punished for my deeds and my oppressors, you know, the interesting part is, in order to go ahead and hurt Klal Yisrael, to vanquish Klal Yisrael, so then our oppressors always have to occupy a higher spiritual level than us. That's the way it works in this world. That's it, just going back to Yonah for just a moment. That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends Yonah to Nineveh, because again, Nineveh was the capital of Ashur, the Assyrian Empire, and the Assyrians were the ones who were being groomed to destroy the Jewish kingdom. But in order to destroy the Jewish kingdom, you have to occupy a loftier spiritual level. Right, so again, that's why they had to do tshuva. So once they did tshuva, they were on a higher level class, which is again, that's why our arch enemy, our present day arch enemy, is the one nation on the face of this world that pledges their allegiance to spirituality, sometimes with greater intensity to Klal Yisrael than Klal Yisrael. Meaning, it's not an accident that Yishmael is our arch enemy. You ever wonder to yourself, How could it be? How could it be that one people, it's not just a Jewish problem, by the way, one people, one religion, literally has a chokehold over this? This is not a political discussion, but over, this is just reality. One nation has a chokehold over the civilized world. Over the civilized world. It's not just an Eretz Yisrael problem. It's not just a Jewish people problem. The entire nature of the civilized world has changed because of radical Islam. It's amazing. It's amazing. You know, it used to be that the most violent religious institution on the face of the earth was the church, right? The church has much blood on its hands. The church never did to the civilized world what Islam is doing. What's the pshat? On a basic level, what it is because what Islam does possess is a certain level of warped and perverted piety. But they have an incredible piety, an incredible dedication to some type of warped idea of a higher ideal. So David HaMelech is saying, you know what? If I'm delivered into the hands of enemies who I feel are pious, then you know what? I understand their piety is greater than mine, and perhaps that's why I'm being punished. But Ribono Shel Olam, you see the enemies that we contend with. They're not holy. They're not good people. They're not on a loftier level. They're not carrying out the word of God. So what are they doing? Take a look at number three. Right, it's the Al-Sheikh. So according to Radak, again, what David HaMelech is throwing his hands up about is he's saying, you've delivered me into the hands of an enemy who is not righteous. You've delivered me into the hands of an enemy of people who themselves are morally bankrupt and corrupt. So Ribon Shel, I can't do this anymore. You take back. And that's what he says. Radak says, if you look back for just a moment, he says, Shaftini Elokim. Shaftini could mean ultimately avenge us. But Shaftini also means, Ribon Shel, I beg you, I'm not trying to escape judgment. It's an incredible idea. David HaMelech is saying, if I deserve to be judged and I deserve to be found guilty, fine, I accept it. But Ribon Shel, you know what I ask? Is you handle my judgment. Or when he says my, he means our judgment. You handle Klal Yisrael's judgment. Do not delegate it to the nations of the world who turn out to be more evil and more corrupt than Klal Yisrael ever was or ever could be. Take back the judgment of our people into your divine hands. Right? The Al-Sheikh number 3 Aleph, Al-Kin Baba Mizmor Azeh, Lomar Lefanech, Yisparach, Ya'asalan Mevokash Echad. So the Al-Sheikh writes, Yibon Shel Olam, David HaMelech says, we have one request. Ubo Niyeh Nechonim, Litar ulis kadesh adniya ruuyim urutzim lefanav yisparach. Ribon Shalom, I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, that in Judaism, we believe in rehabilitative punishment, right? We don't believe in punitive punishment, just meaning punishment just for the sake of punishment. We believe ultimately in restorative punishment. The idea is we punish people, God punishes us as a form of rehabilitation. So the Al-Sheikh says, Ribono Shel Olam, if the point of this punishment is to rehabilitate us, so I'm going to ask you to do it a little bit differently. Fine, skip down third line, 3 Aleph. Ki vahu ki himi hadav What's the point of galus? What's the point of diaspora? What's the point of punishment? The point of punishment and the point of diaspora is to bring us back closer to Hashem. That's the point. Again, it's not punitive. It's not just to patch us. It's a patch, but it's a patch that gets us to return. Halohi ki nira ki amalchios hamegalim velochas hamosam heim hamatsirim umachbidim ala galos shelo kirtzoni yisparach. But says that Ribono Shel Olam, I have to tell you, God, with all due respect, you know, whenever anyone says with all due respect, so you know what's about to happen. With all due respect, I think you're wrong. I think you've got this whole punishment thing wrong. It's not working. It's not working. You want to punish us as a restorative, rehabilitative process. You want us to understand the error of our ways and to come back to you. It's not working. And do you know why it's not working? Because the punishment itself has become so overwhelming that we can't bear it, that we can't deal with it. You know, we've spoken about this so many times, that when a person is suffering, most people use all of their emotional reserves to just simply stay afloat. You know, people have this notion that suffering brings you closer back to God, right? That difficulties, for some people that does work. For some people, desperate times, they find HaKadosh Baruch Hu. For most people, that's not the way it works. For most people, when they are suffering or they are dealing with incredibly overwhelming circumstances, they use all of their emotional energy just simply to stay sane, to stay normal, and to stay afloat. There's very little additional reserves for God, for religion, or or for anyone else. That's why it's a very important idea. You know, sometimes we see people in life and they're struggling with something, whatever it is that they're struggling in life, whether it's a personal issue, a mental health issue, and you know, sometimes a person gravitates away from God. It happens. And so people often try to help individuals in all the wrong ways. They think, oh, we have to bring them closer back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When a person is suffering, your job is not to bring them closer back to God. When a person is suffering, your idea is that your job is to help them with their suffering. People can only come close to, I can only really come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu if I'm a shalom complete person, if I'm broken because of suffering, mental suffering, physical suffering. It's difficult to find God under those circumstances. So the Ashik says, David says, you don't understand, it's not working. You're punishing us to bring us close back to you, but it's not working. But God, it's not your fault why it's not working. It's not working because the nations whom you've given the ability or opportunity or right to oppress us are getting a little bit carried away with their oppression of Klal Yisrael, to the point that the suffering becomes overwhelming. If the suffering becomes overwhelming, we have to devote all of our energy simply to survival. And if all the energies are devoted to survival, then the truth is, God, I have to tell you, there is nothing left for you. Because at the end of the day, the strongest instinct we possess is self-preservation and survival. And so if I have this much energy left, God, for most of us, it's not going to you. It's coming to me. It's going to allow me to stay afloat, allow me to survive. So, Ribono Shel Olam, your entire tachlis, your entire plan for rehabilitative or restorative punishment is not working simply because the nations whom you've delivered us into their hands are taking absolute advantage of this. He goes on, Ach, three aleph, last three lines. He says, Ach, im hu yisparach yishpot osam lefi maseim. But God, if you judge us, and okay, even if you're going to punish us, v'gam osanu itam lefi maseinu, halo az takel taknaseinu. Ribono Shel Olam, I'm asking, David HaMelech says, it's amazing. David HaMelech is not asking to escape judgment. This is a very mature approach, because David HaMelech realizes there are times where we deserve punishment. I'm not asking to escape the punishment. I'm just asking you, God, to take back that process into your hands, and so to speak, please do not outsource divine retribution, right? Don't ship it off to India or somewhere. Go ahead, Ribono Shel Olam, right? Please take care of it yourself, because one thing we could be assured about, which is that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself administers punishment and retribution, it'll be restorative, it'll be rehabilitative, and it will always be laced with chesed and with kindness. That you cannot expect at the hands of a human enemy. He goes on, V'zeh omro shafteini Elokim. This is what it means when it says, Ribono Shel Olam, you judge me. Kilomar shafteini shetiyah ata hadayon. Gam she'elokim hu midas hadin. V'gam haya ata bal din aleinu. So this is amazing. The Al-Shech says, here David, and this is very important, David HaMelech is accepting responsibility. You know, the most important thing, when we do things wrong in life, you know, this is one of the greatest challenges of our present day society is, no one ever wants to take responsibility for anything, right? If my child doesn't do well in school, so whose fault is it? I mean, everyone knows. It's the Rebbe, right? Or it's the Mora, or it's that this one wasn't nice to them, or that they didn't get picked first for the sports team. There's an excuse for everything. You know, I often refer to, remember it was a couple of years ago, the woman who sued McDonald's?
Yes.
This is an amazing thing, right? This woman, Nebuch, it's a terrible case. She went to the drive-thru, she ordered a cup of coffee, she had it between her knees, I don't know what she was doing exactly, but she started driving, and it spilled over her, and she got Nebuch terrible burns. She sued McDonald's because the coffee was too hot. But you could thank her. That's why when you buy a cup of coffee today, if you notice, there's always a disclaimer on it that says, caution, contents hot. Like, thank you, right? But again, but you understand, for someone to even have a haramina to sue, you did something silly. You did, and people, we make mistakes all of the time, but the notion that I'm not responsible if I put a cup of hot coffee between my knees, I'm not responsible if I get burned, it's someone else's responsibility. So the Ashok says, David HaMelech is being very clear. David HaMelech is saying, Shafteini Elokim. This is a very important yesod in general, very countercultural. The buck for my life stops with me. If I don't accomplish something, it's not my wife's fault. It's not my wife's fault, right? It's not my chavrusa's fault. It's not my parents' fault. It's not my teacher's fault. It's my fault. If my child doesn't accomplish something, it's not the teacher's fault, it's not the Rebbe's fault, it's not the teammate's fault. It might be my kid's fault, or it might be me as a parent, it might be my responsibility. David HaMelech saying, Ribono Shel Olam, Shafteini Elokim. What the Alshech is pointing out is Elokim is Midas Hadin. Elokim is the divine name that reflects the divine attribute of strict justice. So David HaMelech, you hear what he's saying? God, I deserve it. We deserve it, whatever deserve it means. Right? David HaMelech is acknowledging we are culpable, and therefore, again, magia lanu. We understand you're going to punish us. We're not trying to escape. I'm owning my mistake. The only thing I'm asking is that the way you mete out punishment is done in accordance with what you hope to accomplish. You want to rehabilitate us? You want to bring us closer? Fine. The only asking is, Shafteini Elokim. God, you got a strict justice? I got it. You're going to punish us? Fine. Not fine, but you take it back. You own that process. Don't outsource it, because once you outsource it again, you never know what our enemies are going to do for us. And skip down to paragraph base. He says, Vizeh, Bein Migoy Lo Chasid, So the Alshich goes on, he explains, because even our enemies that began, he quotes the amazing Gemara from Sanhedrin. The Gemara says that a baskol came out from heavens saying, who is going to destroy my Beis HaMikdash? God was looking for someone to destroy the temple. Now, the truth is, even from the Ummah Sultan, from the Gentile nations, no one wanted to take this job. Why? Because they realized that ultimately, whoever destroys the temple, as much as they are doing the work of God, there's going to be retribution for that. Nebuchadnezzar chooses to answer the call. So you understand how this story plays out? Nebuchadnezzar begins by doing something l'shem shamayim. God needs an agent for the destruction of the temple. So Nebuchadnezzar says, okay, I'm going to do it. It sounds strange, but it's a mitzvah. Meaning God is asking for the same way that a baskel came out and said, Lech Lecha, and Avraham Avinu answered that call of Lech Lecha. There was another baskel that came out and said, destroy the Beis HaMikdash. And Nebuchadnezzar says, fine. Nebuchadnezzar didn't say to God, let me do it. God asked, and he responded. So what happened? So what happened was that, you know, we read about Nebuchadnezzar, and we read about his chief general, Nebuzaradan. Right? Nebuzaradan had a bloodlust for children. And they speak about the bloodshed that Nebuzaradan did. The Kinos in Eicha, the Kinos, excuse me, on Tisha B'Av, describe it in such brutal and horrific imagery about how Nebuzaradan, under the command of Nebuchadnezzar, killed the children, about what they did to the inhabitants of Yerushalayim. Where did that come from? That's not what God asked you to do. God asked you to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Mm-hmm. God asked you to make Eretz Yisrael into a vassal state. That was your job. But you took it too far. You know what the paradigmatic example of this is? The Rambam brings this down in Hilchos Tshuva. So the Rambam spends a significant amount of time trying to reconcile the idea between free will, meaning which is the cornerstone, the underpinning of tshuva, of repentance, and divine foreknowledge. Right? So the Rambam asks the famous question, if God knows what I'm going to do, then I don't really have free choice. And if I don't really have free choice, then I can't do tshuva. So the Rambam gives a very interesting answer. You know what his answer is, essentially? Don't worry about it, right? Meaning his answer is, we don't know what these things mean. And there's a very important idea. This is why in general, Judaism, this is only a new thing that people spend a lot of time on Jewish philosophy. Mm-hmm. Generally, if you notice again, Judaism did not have philosophy for many, many years. The Rambam was one of the first codifiers of Jewish philosophy. Why does Judaism not have a lot of philosophy? Because you know what philosophy creates?
Nothing.
Philosophers, who in turn create more philosophy, which creates meaning. Philosophy is wonderful. I always find it interesting when people get engaged in these conversations that could go on for hours, and then you look at, you wonder, like, what did I get from this? And just a lot of talking. Judaism is an actually oriented religion. We do, we act, and we accept the fact that there are many things that we don't understand and will never understand. So the Rambam, the great philosopher, says, look, you know what? We could sit here for hours and decades and centuries and millennia trying to understand what it means that God knows and have. All I know is this, says the Rambam, I have free will. Just believe it and just live life with that understanding. But in there, the Rambam says, how could HaKadosh Baruch Hu have punished Paro and Mitzrayim when God himself said to Avram Avinu by the Bris Bein HaBesorim, Ve'ger yezar'acha be'eretz lo lohem, ve'avdu ve'inu osam arba me'o shana. God tells Avram Avinu already in Parshas Lech Lecha. He tells him that what? Your children are going to be strangers in a strange land, are going to be enslaved and afflicted for 400 years. So why does God punish Egypt for doing what God already forecasted was going to happen? So the Rambam gives two answers. Number one, God never said it had to be Egypt. That's number one. Egypt decided on their own to do this. It's true they fulfilled the divine will, but God didn't ask them to be the oppressors. And number two, says Ram, which is more on point for us today, which is the level of oppression. The Ribono Shel Olam never asked them to throw our babies into the Nile. That the Ribono Shel Olam never asked. The Ribono Shel Olam never asked them to put our babies into bricks to build our pyramids. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu never, ever wanted. That level, that additional level of barbaric, oppressive treatment, that's what they're held responsible for, says the Rambam. The fact that they enslaved us, just stamp plain enslavement, perhaps there would not have been a punishment because they were in fact executing the divine will. But the extra measure of barbaric behavior and treatment, that's beyond the pale of what the Ribono Shel Olam ever asked them or commanded them to do. So that's what the Al-Sheikh and the Radak are both saying over here. So again, remember, if you bring these both together, what Radak and the Al-Sheikh essentially are saying is, David and Ribono Shel Olam, I'm owning my mistakes, and David HaMelech is speaking on behalf of the nation. I'm owning the nation's mistakes as well. I understand there has to be retribution. What I'm asking is that you take it back, that you own this process, that you not outsource or delegate this to others, because again, there is no telling what we will suffer at the hands of our external oppressors. On a similar vein, take a look at number four. Rav Hirsch writes over here, an incredible idea. Rav Hirsch writes, the psalm is a continuation of chapter 42. So that's that we've seen by everyone, right? That this psalm is a continuation. Remember, Perek Mem Beis, chapter 42, began this greater discussion about Golos, about diaspora. Look what Rav Hirsch writes. The tragedy of, and the, of course, what's amazing is, remember, Rav Hirsch was one of the great luminaries in pre-war Europe. He writes this, this is even before the storm clouds began to gather with Hitler, Yimach Shemo v'Zichro. But look at what he says. This psalm is a continuation of chapter 42. The tragedy of Israel's exile is a twofold one. It must take up the struggle against the nations as a whole, and at the same time, fight against individual men of these nations. So this is a profound idea in and of itself. So if Hirsch says, first of all, we live in a general climate of Klal Hi Esav Sone Es Yaakov, right? It's a little bit overwhelming if you think about it. And by the way, this has been the cause for much assimilation over the years, which is we must live with the ever-present reality that the world doesn't like us. The world doesn't like us. And even if you think they like us, I don't mean to be like a downer, but even if you think they don't like us. They don't like us. The world likes the Jew as long as the Jew serves the purposes and the needs of greater society. But the moment that greater society has the opportunity to be rid of the Jew, again, we've seen it too many times to be ignorant of this fact, that they absolutely will take any means at their disposal to rid society of the Jew. This is the world in which we live in. And it doesn't matter. It's true in every single society that there is always an undercurrent of anti-Semitism. There is always an Esav Sone Es Yaakov. So first says, that's the first thing. It's hard. And that's why, again, over the ages, so much of assimilation is because of this. And to a certain degree, sometimes it's very understandable. It's hard to live life always knowing that you're not liked. It is. Everybody likes to be. It's hard to know that somebody who never knows you, somebody who you'll never meet, will hate you simply because of your religious affiliation. It's, and again, for us, it's even more challenging because often we are not necessarily discernible from greater society except by some of our external trappings. It's so easy to shed those trappings and just simply blend in with everyone else. So the first idea, says our first, the first challenge is the world hates us. The world hates us. The second, that's in general, that's big adol. The second one is that we have individual enemies with whom we must contend. He goes on. Israel charges the national entities with being goy lo chassid. So Rav Hirsch writes that David HaMelech says that we tell God about the nations of the world that they're not pious. Look, what does that mean, goy lo chassid? Do we accept piety from the nations of the world? So says Rav Hirsch, I'll tell you what the issue is. With failure to practice the humanness to which they pay lip service, and particularly with failure to show such kindness to Israel. To them, Israel is not an entity worthy of receiving common decency. and men who are wicked, unjust, and violent take advantage of the position of helpless destitution, which the nations in their unkindness and humanity and inhumanity have assigned to Israel in order to perpetrate acts of wrong and violence against the latter. Israel has recourse only to God against both the inhumanity of the alien communities and the violence of individuals. You hear what Hirsch is saying? You know what David HaMelech is saying is like this. You know, when nations go to war, I understand they're going to kill each other. That's what happens. It's part of war. There are always casualties. You know what the painful part of our suffering is that throughout the ages, it's never just been about persecution. It's been about the dehumanization of the Jew. That is what has always been the attempt. And again, lest you think that this is a historical lesson, the Nazis, Yimach Shemam V'Zichram, this was how they operated. If you look at the way they ran the concentration camps, the extermination camps, and forced labor, all of it was about dehumanizing the individual. They wanted people to forget they were human beings, to relegate them to the status of animals, and then you could do whatever you want. I want to quote to you, you know, Yeshaya Novi says this in Eicha. In Parak Gimel Pasuk Mem Hey, I forgot to put it on the sheet. So the Navi says the following. He's lamenting the plight of Klal Yisrael. He says, Moshe, you know what hurts most? Schi u'ma'oz tisimenu bekeref ha'amim. You know what hurts most? I'll read you the translation. You make us as filth and refuse among the peoples. It's not just the pshat that they hate us, but why do they look at us as subhuman? We don't even, not even looked at on the same level. Meaning they want to hate Jews, they can hate Jews. People hate all kinds of people. But it's not the pshat that they hate Jews as people, because to the nations of the world, often Am Yisrael is some type of subhuman class. We don't even walk on the same ground. We don't even register as being part of the same element of humanity. That, says Rav Hirsch, is sometimes what hurts most. To know that the nations of the world sometimes look at us as subhuman, says Rav Hirsch, is exceptionally difficult. There's much to be said about this. This, again, I'll read to you. You know, it's amazing. If you look at the way Hitler, Yimach Shemo V'Zichro, went ahead, because often people wonder, historians wonder, how could it be that an entire society turned against Jews who had been there for centuries beforehand and had been embedded in society? So, of course, is every single German guilty? No, but the overwhelming majority of them absolutely were. Whether they actively did things or whether they were just complying by not saying anything. So listen to these words. This is a quote from Mein Kampf. I didn't want to put this on the sheet, but I'll read it to you. So this is how Hitler, Yimach Shemo V'Zichro, describes the Jew. Here, he stops at nothing. And in his vileness, he becomes so gigantic that no one need be surprised if among our people, the personification of the devil as the symbol of all evil assumes the living shape of the Jew. So it's not the pshat that they ruin the economy. It's not the pshat that this. Those are all smaller things. The personification of evil, the devil himself. And you read, if you look in all of Nazi literature, Friedrich Oberlohr, he was the head of the Lodz ghetto. When he describes the formation of the ghetto, he writes, "The creation of the ghetto is, of course, only an interim measure. The final aim, in any case, must be to totally cauterize this plague spot." The plague spot that he's referring to is our people. So this, says Rav Hirsch, is Ribbono Shel Olam, why we need you to take back our judgment. Because at the end of the day, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the difficulty is that they relegate us to a subhuman. And when people begin to look at us as subhuman, there is no telling what they are ready to do to us. There's no telling about how their anger and how their fear will be vented. So amazing. So again, we're going to go on to the next approach. But again, so you see from this first approach, the Radak, the Alshech, and Rav Hirsch, what David HaMelech is lamenting over here is not a desire to escape punishment, not a desire to escape judgment. I accept the fact that I'm culpable, and he's speaking on behalf of the nation. I accept the fact that I am responsible. I accept all of those things. But Ribbono Shel Olam, what I'm asking you is judge us. But you judge us, because how long could we possibly be judged by people who dehumanize us? How long could we possibly be judged by people who treat us more like livestock than like human beings? So, Moshe, you want to judge us? You want to punish us? Fine. But, Shafteini Elokim, Bariva Rivi. You judge us. The Midas Hadin judge us. You fight the battles. We'll accept whatever you visit upon us, but just let it come from you and not from them. Take a look at number five, a different approach. So this is from the Sefer Siach Yitzchak. So this Sefer was written by Rav Yitzchak Yosef Weiss, who was a Rav in Verbau in Hungary prior to the war. He was killed by the Nazis, Yimach Shem Bezichram. So he wrote the following. It is a parish on Chumash. So in here he quotes this pasuk, and he writes, Shaftini Elokim Veriva Rivi. Now I forgot to underline here, but if you take the first letters of those words, so the Siach Yitzchak says, it spells Sa'ar. Sa'ar. Vehu Hayetzer Hara. So the Siach Yitzchak leaves us dangling with a very interesting idea. He says, Shaftini Elokim Veriva Rivi, literally judge me God and fight my battles, stands for Sa'ar. Sa'ar, of course, is what? Really, yeast. Yeast. Sa'ar is a leavening agent. It's a leavening agent. So, just as an aside, the Yetzer Hara often is referred to as Sa'ar Shebe Isa. It's called the yeast in the dough, because what does yeast do? Yeast causes the dough to rise. So what does the Yetzer Hara do? The Yetzer Hara is what bubbles up inside of us and gets us to do negative things, gets us to engage in negative life behaviors. So the Siach Yitzchak says something amazing. He says that David HaMelech in this capital, he's disagreeing with the Radak, with the Alshech, with Rav Hirsch, saying David HaMelech is not discussing external enemies here. David HaMelech is discussing internal enemies. Shaftini Elokim Veriva Rivi. Ribono Shalom, do you know what I'm asking your help for? I'm asking your help to wage a battle. But I'm asking your help to wage the battle against the Sa'ar. I'm asking your help to wage the battle against my Yetzer Hara. How does HaKadosh Baruch Hu help us to wage our battle against the Yetzer Hara? So this is done, first of all, you understand that when we speak about Yetzer Hara, so Yetzer Hara means many different things, and we're going to develop this idea in just a little bit. But Yetzer Hara, on the most basic level, represents the self-sabotaging mechanisms that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created within each of us, right? We all have those moments where there's something I wanted to accomplish, but I didn't end up accomplishing it. And the truth is, why didn't I end up accomplishing it? Going back to our responsibility discussion earlier on, I didn't accomplish it because often we sabotage ourselves. And the truth is, we have those moments sometimes where I say, why did I sabotage myself? I mean, why didn't I carry through on that? That's a function of the Yetzer Hara. The Ribono Shel Olam created us with these self-sabotaging mechanisms. So how does HaKadosh Baruch Hu help us in our fight against the Yetzer Hara? So there are, in general, the Sfarim give a number of different answers to this. So for example, the Ramchal, Ramosh Chaim Letzato, so in Mesias Sharm explains that, for example, he explains it actually in the last chapter, in Parakaf Zayin, in the Shar HaKidusha, literally the gate of holiness, the Midah of holiness. So the Ramchal explains that to become holy, you need two things. You have to put in your effort, but you also need Siyata Dishmaya, meaning that man's reach is only so far. And at the end of the day, most things in life could only be accomplished if God chooses to bless my efforts. Therefore, life is a synergistic partnership, bless you, between myself and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I put in what's called Hishtadlus, I put in my effort, I do whatever I can, and hopefully if it's something worthy and something good, God blesses those efforts and they become successful. So how does HaKadosh Baruch Hu help us with the Yetzer Hara? So again, actually the Gemara says explicitly, that Ilmali Hashem Ba'ozro, if God would not help us combat our Yetzer Hara, then what? There is no way we'd ever be successful. We'd be self-sabotaging all the time. So what does God look for, according to the Ramchal and others? God looks for my expression of intent. What God needs from me is to know, what do I want to accomplish? What do I want to be? And what is my plan to get there? And as long as I have a good, well-thought-out plan that I'm willing to stand behind, that I'm willing to actualize, then that's my hishtadlus, that's my effort, and the Ribono Shel Olam helps me along the way as well. And that's why, interesting enough, if you take this approach, if you'll notice again, if you go back to number one for just one moment, so remember, if you go with the Siach Yitzchak's approach, so what happens? David HaMelech says, Shafteni Elokim v'riva rivi, migay lo chasin mi ish mirma v'avo tevateinu. Who is the ish mirma? Who is a deceitful person? Who is this gay lo chasin? Who is this nation who's not virtuous? Says Siach Yitzchak, it's all a reference to who? To the Yetzer Hara. So David HaMelech is listening, God please help me with this battle. Now, what's amazing is, if you look at the last pasuk in the kapitel, so David HaMelech, as often happens in these kapitlach, ends off on a more positive note. He says, Matishtochachi nafshu matahemi soul, why are you so downcast? Why are you so restless? Hochivi lelokim, ki od odena yishuos panai velokai, hope to God, for I will thank him for the salvations of my countenance and my soul. So here, at the end of the kapitel, David HaMelech ends off on what kind of note?
Positive.
A positive note. Because what he's saying is, I believe that as terrible as an enemy that I possess within, at the end of the day, if I try my best, and I put forward a plan to be successful, I put in my hishtadlus, I do my part, God will do his, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will help me be successful. That's according to the Siach Yitzchak. But if we take this a step further, something else may come out from this kapitel as well. Take a look at number 6. Actually, interesting, from this week's parasha. So the opening pasuk from the parasha seems to be a very nondescript, simple, straightforward pasuk. Vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz migurei aviv be'eretz Kinan. Yaakov Avinu sat literally in the land of the dwellings of his father, in the land of Kinan. Says Rashi, HaKadosh number 7. Va'od nidrash. Now, the obvious question, remember, Rashi is a reactive mefarish, which means that whenever Rashi comments on something, he sees something that bothers him in the text. So what is Rashi seeing that bothers him in this text? Why does the Torah have to tell me that Yaakov Avinu was living in Canaan? We learned that. That was last week's parasha. We heard he had the encounter with Esav. He's went back home to the familial home. We know all of that already. We learned about the death of Yitz. We learned about all of these things. So why is there a need to state it again over here? Therefore, says Rashi, the Torah is not trying to convey to me geographic information, but rather the Torah is conveying to me emotional information. How so? Says Rashi number 7, Vayeshev. Bikesh Yaakov leshev b'shalva. Yaakov Avinu wanted to live a life of tranquility. That's so. Says Rashi, Vayeshev Yaakov means Yaakov was tranquil for the moment, and he wanted more than anything that tranquility would continue for the years to come. But Yaakov Avinu wanted tranquility. Kafatz alav rogzo shel Yosef. Right in that moment where he thinks things have calmed down, remember a couple of psukim later, two psukim later, what happens? The beginning of the animosity between Yosef and his brothers, which ultimately snowballs into a terrible, terrible family dynamic. And Rashi goes on, Tzadikim evakshim leshe b'shalva. You know, tzadikim, a chutzpah, right? They want peace in this world, right? Tzadikim want a little bit of peace and quiet in this world. Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, lo dayin la tzadikim asher metukon on the olam haba, ela shemevakshim leshev b'shava ba'olam hazeh. Ribo Shalom, it's amazing. This Rashi always bothered me. Ribo Shalom was like incredulous. What? It's not enough you have olam haba? You want olam hazeh as well? And the tzadikim say?
Yes,
actually. Right? Why? Who said it has to be an either or? Why does it have to be that if I have a beautiful olam haba, then my olam hazeh has to be a wreck? So it's interesting that here, and let's go back for a second. So if you're Yaakov Avinu, remember, Yaakov Avinu has already had a terribly traumatic life. The trauma with Esav when they were young, the escape to Lavan, dealing with a father-in-law who was totally crooked. Remember, Yaakov Avinu has daily drama. Why daily drama? Not anymore as much, but there was daily drama because of Rachel and Rivka. Because Rivka, right? Rachel and Leah, right? There's daily drama. Daily drama. And by the way, understandable drama. There's one wife in this marriage who feels despised, who feels unloved. There's another one who knows that she's the chosen wife, but yet again can't bear as many children as her. It's crazy. It's crazy. Then couple that with the reunification with Esav, always having to look over her shoulder, the abduction and rape of Dina. All of these things are happening to Yaakov. Yaakov Avinu says to himself, "You know what, Ribono Shel Olam? I just want some quiet. I just want some. It's been enough already." Bikesh Yaakov. Leishev b'shalva. Yaakov wants peace and tranquility, and essentially, what does the Ribono Shel Olam say to him?
No.
No. No. And not no because I don't like you, not no because you're not pious enough, not no because you didn't earn it. No, because what you're asking for is not what this world is about. You want tranquility, you want peace, you want quiet, you have all of that in Olam Haba. You have an eternity of that. Olam Hazeh, that's not what this is about. So take a look at number 8. So the Mefarshim are all bothered by this. I want to share with you two beautiful ideas. So the Sfas Emes writes, the Ger Rebbe writes, Pikesh Yaakov Leishei B'Shalva, Kavatzav Rogzal Yolusuf. Bevandai. So So the Sash Tema says, what does this mean? Right, that Yaakov Avinu wants to sit on a lounge chair, wants to put his feet up, and wants to relax until 120? Meaning, what does it mean when it says, Bikesh Yaakov Leishay B'Shalva? The Sash Tema says, Bivadai Yaakov Lo Ratza Leishay B'Shalva, Ad Shetikin Atzmo Lagamrei, V'lo Haya Chashash Mizeh. The Sash Tema says something amazing. He says, Yaakov wasn't asking for tranquility now. What Yaakov was saying was, God, I just want to know if there's going to come a point where I've accomplished all I need to accomplish and there'll be tranquility from that point on. So it might not be for another 30 years. I'm willing to accept that. But just let me know there's a finish line in this world where after I reach it, the goal, the reward for reaching that, for doing everything you're supposed to do in this world is a little bit of peace and quiet before you leave this world. Ach, Ratzon HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mishe Yisrael, but says the Sfas Emes, what God was expressing to Yaakov was that I want something different from you. Asher yihyeh kol yomav biyigiyo lohosif b'avodoso yisbarach shemo ki'inyin atosefes ein loshir. And what does God say to Yosef, to Yaakov? God says to Yaakov, I'm sorry, there's never any shalva. There's no peace. There's no peace. And you know why there's no peace and there's no tranquility? Because God says, I always need you to grow. And how does growth occur? Growth only occurs with friction and tension. Growth only occurs with challenge. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know, you want a life without challenge. We all have that life. That's after 120. The Olam HaEmes, the world to come, there is no challenge. Not one little bit of challenge. There's no nisayon. There are no difficulties. There are no tests. There's no pain. There's nothing. But the difference is, what else is there not? There is also no growth, meaning you have what you have. And whatever you've acquired over 120 years in this earth, that's what you have to subsist on for all eternity. But says the Sfas Emes, what God was trying to tell Yaakov Avinu is, you see, Yaakov, your entire request is based on a flawed understanding. You're assuming that you come to a point where you've accomplished everything you have to accomplish. And so you're asking God, when I get to that point, can I just take it easy for a little bit after that? And the Ribbono Shel Olam says, there's only one problem, which is, there's no such point. There's no such point where a person ever has accomplished enough. There's no such thing where a person has ever done enough. There's no such thing as reaching a point where a person has self-actualized enough. There's always more to be. There's always more to accomplish. There's always more room to grow. And therefore he says, V'zeh inyon rogzel shel Yosef, ubir ha'inyon, ki ha'klal shekol ha'soga ve'elyon ha'madregos barak ha'yidei hisgabrus neged ha'yitzahara. Do you hear what the Sfas Emes says? The Sfas Emes, you know what the Yitzahara is? The Yitzahara ultimately represents the challenges in life. That's what the Yitzahara is. So it says, you know what the point of the Yitzahara? The Yitzahara is not there to sideline us. The Yitzahara is not there to handicap us. The Yitzahara is not there to knock. The Yitzahara is there as an enabler for growth. The challenges in life, says the Sfas Emes, ultimately are there for one purpose, to allow us to grow as individuals. And therefore, Yaakov, you want to suggest, you're putting forward an offer that when you reach your level of accomplishment in this world, God, please stop challenging me. Moshe says, Yaakov, I have a counter offer. You're not going to like it, but the counter offer is, you never reach that point. There's never a point where you have to stop growing. There's never a point where you have to stop doing. There's never a point where you have to stop accomplishing. Therefore, challenge is part of the human condition. Because without challenge, without Yitzhahara, without friction, there is no catalyst for growth. And the truth is, if we're honest with ourselves, most of us grow as a result of some type of push. Sometimes the push can be in a positive way, but more often than not, the push is the result of some type of frictional life challenge. That, says Rashi, is what Kafzo Alav Rogzel Shel Yosef. Yaakov, you're going to have to grow from this experience, and your challenges are there to help you develop as an individual. Look at number 9. So this is from Rabbi Nachman of Breslov. Rabbi Nachman here says something absolutely beautiful. He says, duh. Kesha'kadosh Baruch Hu mistakel b'neshama shetuchal, lahachzir b'nei Adam b'tshuva v'la'asos gerin. So Rabbi Nachman says, when God sees a particular neshama that has the ability to cause others to return, to repent, and to literally, la'asos gerin means to make converts. The way Rabbi Nachman understands this, la'asos gerin in this context means to influence people. When the Boshom realizes that a particular person has the ability to influence others, listen to this. Azai hu yizbarach ba'atzmo kiviyachol mevakesh v'roa sheyihye machlokes alav. God makes sure that person has the ability to influence, has certain struggles, trials, and tribulations. Why? Ki ein mekablim gerin limos hamashiach v'lo b'mei shlomo, mishum shulchan melachim, ki az einon miskarin mi'ava, rak machmas sheroen gidulas Yisrael. Ve'ikir agerin, I'm just going to read a few more lines, ki shem esgarin be'es Yisrael schufin, boni b'dochak, shaminach, something very interesting. You know, the halacha is, we will not accept any converts when Mashiach comes. Two periods in history, there are no converts. There were no converts allowed during the days of Shlomo, and no converts allowed during Messianic era. Why? Because during the days of Shlomo was a golden age for Judaism. Who doesn't want to be on the winning team? So we can't assume that such a conversion is done for proper motivations. When Mashiach comes and the existence of God becomes clear and the exalted stature of Klal Yisrael becomes clear, we also will not accept converts because, again, the motivations are suspect. So therefore, says Rabbi Nachman something so amazing. We'll just translate his words literally and then I'll explain it to you what he's really trying to convey. So if somebody has the ability to, quote-unquote, convert others and to bring them back to Judaism, so the Rebbe says, Hashem will make sure that such a person like that has challenges. Why? Because if a person like that has an easy life, those people who may return may say to themselves, what? Oh, well look, that guy is the paradigm of Judaism. He has such a wonderful life. I want that also. In order to make sure that people who return for the right reasons, the person who has the ability to cause them to return is him or herself plagued by challenges as well. So that if those people decide to return, they're returning for the right purposes, right motivation. He goes on. Skip down a little bit. Vizeu, I'm now on the second page, five lines down. Vizeu, four lines down. Vizeu vayeshiv Yaakov eretz migorei aviv. So this is the pshat in the puzzle, says Rabbi Nachman, that Yaakov Avinu sat in the land of the dwellings of his father. V'isah migorei aviv, shahaya megayer geirim kemo avosav. It's actually quite a beautiful idea. Be'eretz migorei aviv means that Yaakov Avinu followed suit of his grandfather, not Yitzchak, because Yitzchak did not convert people. Yitzchak Avinu, Yitzchak's job, his tachlis, was to solidify the Abrahamic foundation so that Yaakov could build upon it even more. That's why Yitzchak was not a dynamic innovator. Yaakov followed in the footsteps of his grandfather, Avram Avinu. He took the message of God to the people and brought people closer to the Shechina. Therefore, again, v'zesham razav v'yishiv Yaakov shebikesh Yaakov v'yishiv b'shalva miyad kafetz alav rogzol shel Yosef. Haynu machmas sheyaakov hayu megayer gerim b'chinas migurei aviv ayidei zelo hayu yachal v'yishiv b'shalva. So Rabbi Nachman says something amazing, that since Yaakov Avinu's tachlis was to bring people close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and if people are really going to return, they have to be able to return knowing that it's a life filled with challenges. Therefore, the person who is going to be their bridge to God also had to be beset by what? Beset by challenges. Because that's the only way that they would have an accurate portrayal of what the life of a Jew, the life of a monotheist is like. But if we take this a step further, leaving it aside from converting people, what Rabbi Nachman is really saying is the following, that at the end of the day, there is no growth as a mashbia. A mashbia is someone who influences others. The best way to influence others is to be a role model as to how to handle challenge. You know, it's amazing. The Gemara says, you learn a lot about people. We spoke about this, I think, last week or the week before. Bekoso, kiso, kaso. You learn a lot about people when they drink a little bit. All kinds of interesting things come out. You learn about people, again, by how they spend their money. How people relate to their wealth is very telling. And kaso. Kaso literally means anger. What happens when people get angry? But you know what kaso means on a deeper level? How do people handle things when life doesn't go their way? It's very telling because, you know, it is easy to be the paradigm of spirituality and connection to God when life is going exactly as you want it. When things begin to fall apart and things begin to unravel, who wags the accusatory finger towards God saying, how could you do this to me? And ultimately, who is able to rise up to the occasion? That's kaso. And says Rabbi Nachman something amazing. Bikesh Yaakov leishev b'shalva. Yaakov Avinu wants to live with tranquility. And the Baal Shalom says, Yaakov, your primary role is as a mashbia, as someone who is going to have an impact on others. And you know what the greatest impact you're going to have on others, the greatest impact? is you're going to show them how a person could weather all types of life challenges and still maintain fidelity and allegiance to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why, fast forward a little bit, that when Yaakov and Yosef are finally reunited, and Yosef brings his father to meet Paro, what does Paro say to Yosef? Right? He says to him, how old are you? But he's not really saying how old, he's saying, how old are you? You look terrible. How old are you? And what does Yaakov Avinu say? He gives his age, and he says, my days are ma'at v'ra'im. And Chazal take Yaakov to task for that. They punish Yaakov. Say, Rosh Hashanah, punish Yaakov. What are you talking about? It's not your job. Your job is to be a mashpia. Your job is to show people how to handle challenge. Your job is to keep it together, even when life is difficult. That's the power of challenge. So you see, according to the Sfas Emes, the great power of challenge, the positive power of challenge, is without challenge, we don't grow as individuals. According to Rabbi Nachman, the great opportunity of challenge is that challenge allows us to really be a role model. If you think about it, what's one of the most important lessons that parents give over to their children? One of the most important lessons is how to deal with adversity, right? And this is a very important thing. And I think especially for women, because besides the fact that mothers give over most of the messages that children retain. You know, they usually retain very few of them, even fewer from fathers, most of them from mothers. But mothers often have a greater challenge. Why? Because mothers often feel the greatest stresses of the home life. And so a mother always has to be careful. When she's in the midst, when she's being squeezed from all sides and all of those, and she just wants to scream out or lash out, her ability to keep it together teaches her children an incredible lesson. That no matter what the challenge, I'm talking about like big challenges, like carpool, right? No matter what the challenges are, I'm going to keep it together. That's the power. That's the power of life challenge. According to the Sfas Emes, the power, the gift of challenge, is that it allows us to develop as individuals. According to Rabbi Nachman, the gift of challenge is that it allows us to develop as mashpia, as a mashpia, as someone who has an influence of others. Now, why am I sharing all of this with you? One more piece, and we'll tie this all together, then we're going to have to stop. Oh, we really have to stop. I'm sorry. So take a look at the last source, and with this we'll conclude. Take a look at number 10. So I'm going to tell you this outside just because of time. So remember again, this is when Yosef is in jail. And what happens? The butler and the baker both have dreams. They're disturbed by the dreams. Yosef interprets the dreams, right? So for the wine steward, everything works out well. Shlosha serigim, three vines represent 3 days. Another 3 days, you're going to be squeezing the grapes into Paro's cups. You're going to be restored to your former position. What happens? Skip down to number 10, to pasuk tes zayin. Pasuk 16. Vayar Sara Ofim Kitov Pasar. So the baker saw that Yaakov Avinu did a great job interpreting the butler's dream. Vayomer al Yosef, Ani b'chalomi v'nei shlosha sali chori arushi. I also had a dream, and in my dream, there are three baskets on my head. Ubesala elyon mikol ma'achal paro. So he goes on, he explains all the different dreams. The upper basket, the middle basket, the lower basket, and the birds are eating from on top of my head from the baskets. And what does Yosef say? Vayan Yosef Vayomer, Zepis Rono, Shlosha Sas. In another 3 days, you're going to be executed. So Rav Chanan Wasserman, Hashem Yikom Domo, was executed by the Nazi Machshon Bezichem in Kovno by the 9th Fort. So Rav Chanan Wasserman asked, how did Yosef know this? Now, of course, how did Yosef know how to interpret the dream of the baker? How did he know that the baker was going to die after 3 days? Now again, the simple answer is, Rech HaKodesh, he had divine inspiration. What Rav Chanan Wasserman wants to know is there some type of remez in the dream that allowed Yosef to interpret this? And Rav Chanan Wasserman gives an amazing answer. He says that was the difference between the butler's dream and the baker's dream. He says the butler's dream, there's dynamic activity. He's squeezing the grapes, he's serving Paro. What is the baker doing in his dream? Nothing. Nothing. Where there's movement, there's life. Where there's stagnation, there's death. Why is this important for us? Because now if we bring this all together, we understand that the Yitzhar, remember the Siach Yitzchak said, Shafteni Elokim V'riva Rivi, Rashi Tevos, for Sa'ar, for Yitzhar. The Yitzhar, remember, is not, as I've said many times, the little guy who stands on our shoulder. Remember, the Gemara says that the Yitzhar, who Satan, who Malach HaMoves. The Yitzhara represents the totality of all life challenges. Where there is no Yetzer Hara, there is no growth. Where there's no Yetzer, where there's no challenge, there's no growth as an individual. Where there's no challenge, there's no challenge, there's no growth as a mashpia. There's no growth as someone who influences. So watch this. David HaMelech, go back now to number one for just a moment. David HaMelech begins this capital and he says, Shavtim Yelokim, V'riva rivi migoy lo chosid mi ishmir v'al, God, save me from the Yetzer Hara. Save me. You have to tell me, I can't deal with this guy anymore. I'm constantly self-sabotaging, constant challenges. Be kesh, David leishev b'shalva. You think Yaakov Avinu was the only person who wanted peace and quiet in life? You don't think David HaMelech wanted a little bit of tranquility, at least maybe a long weekend? He also wanted something. God, help me get rid of this Yetzirah. And again, in Pesukim Beis, Gimel, Dalid, he's lamenting the difficulty of dealing with Yetzirah. But what does he say in Pasuk Hey? But then he says to himself, watch this. Number one, Pasuk Hey. Ma tishtochachi nafshi u'ma tehemi alai. Why are you so sad? He's speaking to himself. Why are you so sad about this Yetzirah? Why are you so sad? Why? Hochili le'lokin ki od odeni yipana ishos panai ve'elokai. Hope to God, because I will thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for what? I thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for this Yetzirah. Meaning, David HaMelech begins the capital lamenting the existence of the Yetzirah, lamenting the existence of life challenges, and asking God to remove all of them. And by the time we get to the end of the capital, David HaMelech is not only lamenting the existence, but rather, what is he doing? He's actually thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the Yetzirah. He's thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the challenges. I begin by saying, why me? Why are you doing this? I just want Bikesh David Leishev B'Shalva. And by the end of the capital, Ribono Shel Olam, it doesn't hurt any less. But I want to take an opportunity to say, I'm not going to be sad or depressed about my challenges. Ribono Shel Olam, I'm going to thank you for my challenges. Because my challenges make me who I am. My challenges, without that friction, without that push, without that force, I would not develop into the person I could be. I would not be forced to develop my potential. Without those challenges, I could not develop into a true role model for others. So what begins as a lamentation, what begins as David HaMelech lamenting this Yetzer with whom he's saddled with, ultimately ends David HaMelech again in a very cautious, kind of understated way. Thank you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for all of my challenges. Because first of all, if you've given them to me, I know that I could overcome them. If you've given them to me, I know that I need them. And because you've given them to me, I know that in some way, in somehow, some purpose, they will make me who I am. All right, we'll stop over here for today.